and welcome to the Weekly Scroll Podcast. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Lucky you. I should have guessed that one, but I didn't. I didn't know where you were going with
Who
it at all.
Who could have, you know?
Yeah, nobody. I do miss, God, what was it called? TGIF? Were you old enough for TGIF?
I remember that, yeah, absolutely. The television block that had all the shows on it. Yeah,
the four
that
block,
was a sick block, actually, yeah.
It changed so much. I remember there was a time where there was like the All Magic block or whatever, and they had that show about that kid that came back as a ghost because he ate that hamburger under his bed and killed him and stuff. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was weird. It only lasted not very long. I couldn't tell what the show was
called.
I wonder why
it only lasted not very long.
Yeah, it was weird. I remember like way back when it was like Perfect Strangers.
I do vaguely remember that.
Perfect Strangers, Step by Step, Full House, Family Matters. Man.
Great times. Today we are talking about The Last Sabbath, a witch's role-playing game.
Boom.
I got my physical here too.
Yeah. It's a nice physical book.
Yeah, it's a great physical book.
Yeah.
It's a very large, if you're listening, it's a very large, almost like a magazine.
It's 8.5 by 11, like full size. Yeah,
full size. In it's beautiful all the way through. The art's great. The colors are great. It's an enjoyable thing to hold in your hand. Unfortunately, it doesn't really there's no back. So on my shelf, I have to display it a little bit differently for it to be seen. But cover art's amazing.
Yeah, well, the art in general is fantastic. The artist's name is it's Loputin, I want to say. Loputin. Award-winning. That's Jessica CIOFFI. Not even going to try. Award-winning self-taught artist in Brescia. And then just a list of insane accomplishments, including like the highest crowdfunding campaign ever for like a published Italian comic book for one called Aether, which I happen to have. So as part of the Kickstarter, let's go through all that we got. So the book itself is gorgeous. Like all of the art on the front is very, you know, esoteric and witchy and everything, which is normal. But all of the red, it's a lot of black, red, and white, which is my favorite. All of the red is foiled, so it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's not stapled on the side. It's the is this smice sewn? Is that what they call this? It's thread sewn on the side, not stapled. There's the Last Sabbath book. There is the Grimoire as well. And the Grimoire is just a huge book of prompts with a bunch of different writers and stuff in it. And it's really cool, full of more art. On top of that, I did get a print. So I was supposed to get an official signed numbered print and everything, but this was a replacement package that they sent me, which is cool because they sent extras and then I sent one to you. But I did still get a print. It's gorgeous. I don't know if this is original print. That's not the one shown on Kickstarter, but it's still beautiful, still signed. And then as part of the Kickstarter, you could also back to get the two books from Loputin. So I got Francis and Aether, and they're both gorgeous. I can read one of them's in English, one's in Italian, so Google Translate was really helping me get through this one. They're stunning. The art is amazing.
Those are beautiful. Yeah.
They're gorgeous. They're gorgeous. The paper is super thick. Like it's the art is amazing. Very happy. I almost didn't back this as like an add-on, and I'm super glad I did. The art is absolutely fantastic.
It's funny. I saw this project when it was on Kickstarter, and it was kind of in that period where I was trying to ratchet down the thousands of Kickstarters that I've backed. It's hundreds, actually. But and upon reading this, I really regret not backing it because I really do like this a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. It's interesting. We'll get it. It's not something, it's not like what we normally review here, which is interesting. The last thing I got with it, I got a bookmark too, which is cool. With some art on it. Wolf on one side, and then like the girl, and then like the spirit coming up. We'll see the art in the book on the other side. And then there was like a button, like a pin. I'm talking about like a push button.
Yeah.
Like I got that as well. So these are, it's gorgeous. It's cool. So, The Last Sabbath. So I wrote notes in a real book again, like a dummy instead of on the PDF. But, Last Sabbath was on Kickstarter. It funded, August 16th, 2022 with, 1,107 backers for, €30,393. I have a 5,000 euro thing here too. I don't know where that's from, which equates to 32,606 American dollars.
Did we say the author's name yet?
Oh, so that is, well, I did it in the tweet, but it is Atropo Kalevra and Valentino Sergi, inspired by the art of Laputin. So really cool. In association with Officina Meningi. Which is an Italian publisher like of games into Italian to distribute, which is cool. But if you go to the website, you'll see a shitload of games. Like they mentioned at one point in here, Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. And the thing that I love about, especially, I've seen a lot of games, but in Italy, they have a good distribution of like English games into Italian. When they do different cover art, I'm like, fuck, now I just want the Italian version just so I can get the variant cover art. 12 Years has a variant cover art that is absolutely stunning. Yeah, I asked Max if he could try to snag one for me because the company that sells it does not sell outside of Italy. Trust me, I tried. But yeah, so go check out Officina Meningi if you speak Italian and want the games in Italian. But yeah, so that is this. So Last Sabbath is a rules light, masterless journaling RPG that can be solo or cooperative. So this is a story game, like hardcore story game. Yeah. I know that we like, I mean, I personally am generally more on the side of, I guess, a little bit more trad-ish in that like dice mechanics and all that kind of stuff. I like swinging a sword, you know. Although we do also, I mean, love a good story game. Fiasco's great. Tin Candles is amazing.
Absolutely.
And those are kind of the places that I would put this in. It is a very light system, but it's fun. It's enjoyable, and the book is really cool. So, why don't we check it out?
No, we're just gonna talk around it for the next hour. Yeah. We don't actually look at it.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. So here's the cover. It's gorgeous. It also, the PDF is in pages. And if you know me, I'm sorry, spreads.
And spreads, yeah.
Spreads, yeah. If you know me, you know I hate spreads, but I don't hate it really in this book because a lot of the art, the layout is fantastic. And the art a lot crosses pages. So we'll look at it in, also the font is not so small that it, you know, looks crazy. And And I think we both
very readable.
Oh, super readable. But I think we both did the same thing where I was like, I don't want to read the PDF for this. I want to hold the physical book when I read this.
Yeah. This is my first time opening the PDF right now. So when you said earlier, it's like, oh, it's in spreads. I'm like, oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. I will say it is bookmarked in Italian.
No way. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It is bookmarked in Italian.
Yeah. So I don't speak Italian.
Hilarious, actually.
But hey, at least there's bookmarks, right? You know? And I will say, I do believe all of the people involved in this project are Italian speakers first, native Italian speakers, because my only kind of knock before we get in this a little bit, it's not even a knock, it's just a thing is really there is some translation issues kind of in some spots, but that's not even like a knock. Like I don't, it's a thing that's going to happen, you know, when something's not permanent and it's not anything that was a big enough detriment that, like, I think maybe in one spot I had to reread something and that's about it. So, like, stuff like that is something that, like, I would point out, but I would never take points off for being like, hey, thank you for also giving this to us in English.
Yeah, for the most part, I think the localization on this is very acceptable.
Yeah, it's only a couple of spots I've made that were, and that's really the only big critique I have. And as we go through, I mean, I'll probably bitch about other stuff, but yeah, so the cover's gorgeous. Is the art of this girl doing some divination. And behind her, there's this kind of skull, wolf, esoteric, you know, six arms, eyes, symbols, you know, elemental symbols here. red and white on black. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely stunning. The art all the way through really helps make this amazing. And then we're going to kick off the first page and it's going to drop into spreads. Here we go. Boom. Girl on the side. I will say there are some boobies in this. So
there
Twitch.
Are a couple.
Sorry. It's art, you know?
It is.
Yeah. So Last Sabbath, which is role-playing game, as we said, Atropo Calabra. I'm butchering it. And I do apologize. Valentino Sergi, illustrated and inspired by Laputin from Officina Meningi. Acknowledgement page, all this. I love the background paper on this. It's just like an off-white grayish, again, like parchment-y, but not parchment in that, like, you see the edges and stuff. It just looks like old paper.
I feel like our past, like, not past several specifically, but we've had several episodes where I've realized that, like, you can do black and white, but if you make the background just a little off-white, it is so much, it's so significantly better on the eyes.
Oh, yeah. Well, black and white is obviously the highest contrast, which means it's easy, but, like, staring at black on white, it burns into your eyes. Everything I own is in dark mode, and if it isn't, I find some program that will turn it into dark mode so I don't have to look at a flashlight in my eyes 24/7, you know?
I think I actually have a dark mode extension on my browser for Chrome that you suggested, so...
I'm sure I do. I have, like, three because some programs don't work right, so yeah. Some are finally coming through. Like Docs has its own
built-in
dark
now.
Mode finally. Yeah, Drive now. Google Drive just came out with one as well. So anyway, here's a game.
Super on topic.
Yeah. So there's a little blurb here in the beginning. It says, "Welcome. The mother's call takes on many forms. The rustle of wind, a speck of light from the bottom of the sea, or symbols magically appearing upon your skin. If you choose to respond, the place of power will be revealed to you." And then there's like three more paragraphs that I'm not going to read. It's really cool. It's super vibey. And then it says here at the bottom, kind of a breakdown of the game. If you're playing solo or if this is your coven's first time playing an RPG, you can use scene prompts instead of divination tools, which we'll get into. These prompts are ready-to-use scenarios that can be randomly chosen, blah, blah, blah. Due to specificity of theme, we refer to witches as a female collective noun in this manual, but each participant is free to interpret the role and character they prefer without gender constraints. I like that. I like that they're just like, hey, do what you want, but just to keep consistency, this is what we're doing. And I do love, again, the layout choice. Throughout the entire book, they have this, like, red sketchy box and that super obviously notes, and they use it so well throughout. Next page is another gorgeous piece of art of some flowers and some hands with some symbols, and then a table of contents that is in fact hyperlinked. It's over just on the numbers, but it is in fact there, which is really nice.
You know, it's weird. It's actually from the end of the word to the number. So if you click right over each word. Yeah, I noticed that. I was like,
it's everything over. Yeah, it must have been laid out in like two boxes here and it just bumped up to
that
it.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah. And the thing is, it's only until you get to the divination tools, the whole thing is like 30 pages. So like it is hyperlinked. It's hyperlinked in Italian. So I'm not going to take any notes off of that. Yes, bookmarked in Italian, yeah. And it is fully hyperlinked, even though it's only 30 pages. So really good job with the tools for that. And we're saying it is 30 pages, but it is still like full size 8.5 by 11 too. It's not just a little zine. So
right.
It does have a little bit more page to it, but the pages are pretty sparsely written on.
There's also a ton of art. Like, and they're not small pieces. They're just like these massive, almost full page pieces.
Yeah, it's like the entire thing, like almost every time, yeah.
It's a really cool little art book, you know. I mean, it is definitely a game. It definitely does remind me a lot of a 1,000-year-old vampire.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. Yeah, I mean, for the storytelling aspects of it and stuff like that too. Yeah, I wonder if they mentioned that in the back of the book, and I'm curious if that was one of the original inspirations. I think they said it somewhere too, and I'm just an idiot and don't remember. But speaking of the first page art, so first of all, also can I tell you that this book does exactly what I say that every fucking book should do every goddamn time, right? Because I have solidified on actually knowing what I want to say, and that is I don't like when character creation is first, because I feel like you need to know the game mechanics to understand reading through character creation. Like if the goal is to understand as you're reading it, as opposed to having to like look at multiple parts and then bounce back once you get it, if you want consistency to the game, I do not like character creation first. But if you're going to do character creation first, I love that they do this here. So this page that we're starting on, page 6, which is like the first page, it is an overview of the game mechanics. It literally breaks down what the game is, right? And on the next page, like, talks setting, game flow, scenes, everything, and then goes into the rules for those things. So I love that it starts with this. So in my in a quote-unquote normal game, like more OSR style, this is what I want. It's just give me one page of, like, the core rules at the minimum and the things that you're going to use. If you're going to use skills and talents and things like that, just say you're going to use skills. The skills this, you're going to use talent, talents this, like the bare minimum. And so that then when I go to character creation or something like that, I understand what I'm looking at and then the rules or whatever. But I love that it starts with this.
I've grown to agree, I think, on the whole. I like an overview before character creation because I was very much like character creation first. Because that's just who I am as a person. But I do agree. Overview, then character creation, then a deep dive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, or rules and then character creation, but at least, you know,
no.
Something.
No.
So no. Game mechanics overview, real quick. So this is a journaling game. We don't really talk about journaling games a ton here, but that means you write in a journal. In case you didn't get that. You have a record or a diary. At each scene is made up of several rounds, and basically, depending on the number of rounds, each person will write in the record each round, and then you determine how many number of rounds that determines a game. It is masterless, which means that there is no GM running the game. You are using prompts or divination tools. It's rules light. It's pretty much just narrative. Like, yeah. how to push the narrative. And then there's a note here. The scene system makes it possible to organize either short game or long game, as I said. So shorter number of scenes, shorter game, longer number of scenes, longer game. You can do, you know, 1 to 3 scenes in a night and be done with it. Or you can say we're doing 7 and do 1 a night. And I really like that a lot.
Yeah, it's a very easy way to, like, throttle the game, like, length or increase it.
Yeah, I gotta throttle that length, you know. But the page
so on, mad at you for that.
The art on this page is one of my favorites. It's very great. There is, first of all, the art is stunning, but there is this, maybe not on all the pieces, but on some of the pieces, there is this underlying kind of like sexuality to a number of the pieces.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's incredibly feminine. Like,
yes.
Art-wise game, and I love that about it. I think it is so beautiful to go through. But yeah, there is definitely like a underlying sexuality to some of the pieces.
Yeah, and this one, there is this girl. She's crouched down in some flowers, but like reaching up from underneath her is this like what I assume is the wolf, the werewolf's hand, like holding on to her stomach, like
the demon that she's making a deal with, or whatever, you know.
Yeah. With like a sun behind her head. It's gorgeous. Or a moon, I think.
I'm pretty sure it's a moon.
Yeah. Then we get into setting and safety tools. Basically, the setting is whatever you want it to be. I like that. There, another part of the layout, if we go through this real quick. As you said, the background is this like grayish, you know, kind of paper. There's all these little leaf motifs at the tops of the pages, but actually looking at the font and everything themselves, it's sort of extremely readable, just like serif font. I love the all caps headers at the top that have these like red lines coming off the sides. It's super obvious.
Yeah.
I really like that it's broken up into sections of just type and then instructions. Or like examples a little bit in like a grayish box background. And then anytime that there's something important, there's either, as I said before, there's like a red sketchy box that outlines it. With like a little symbol off to the side, one of the elemental symbols, I don't remember which one. Or there is sometimes the same kind of sketchiness in black. Is that Earth? Okay.
I think so.
And then it'll literally say note in red at the top. And then give you another little note. But at no point does any part of it feel either too crowded or not enough stuff on the page. You know what I mean? Like, it's, it breathes extremely well. Like, the, whoever did the layout for this did a great fucking job, because the art even too, it, like, there's a lot of text wrapping around the edges of the art, so the art really feels like it's part of it, as opposed to just being like, okay, I have an empty space on the bottom of this page, like, stick something in it. It almost feels more like they said, give us 30 pages of art and we'll put the words around it, you know?
Yeah, I love it. In this page especially, it's used as a divider between the two pages. It's a very clean divider. It helped create, it creates a good division of space and ideas. But kind of rolling back to the setting portion, what I really like about here is they give you two options of how to do setting. They say at first to set it up before, like discuss with the group, what is the setting like? Is it the wizard school, whatever? But as you become more familiar with the game, and I really like this, you can just not do that. And next time you play your first round of narration, everyone just, as their turn goes, build the world. And I'm like, oh, that actually sounds like a lot of fun. I definitely wouldn't do that the first time, like they say, but like once I'm familiar with it, I'd be like, yeah, we're going to make up the world as we go.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. So that's a great thing that they do in here a lot. And I really enjoy, in some other games, I enjoy it less. Not for, for a different reason. So let me explain. In this, it's a narrative storytelling game. So it, I love that it tells you this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Period. But also in a gray box or off to the side or in some other little thing, here's ways that you can do it a little bit differently. Or like once you're more experienced, whatever. That's like a common theme throughout the book, is just like do it this way. But as you get more accustomed to it, or next time you do it, or if you want to do something a little bit different, there's so many options for that. I mean, especially in like the divination tools versus the scene prompts.
Yes.
And then the fact that there's like a whole nother book of scene prompts. And I like that it keeps giving you, if you want to do it different, here's an option. If you want to do it different, here's an option. In a story game like this, I feel like that's really important. In a game that's more kind of like the trad, you know, like dice and, and everything that, well, I think we've talked about this once or twice.
Yeah, I want a more definite, I do not like in more trad or mechanics-based games where like, here's the mechanic. Oh, but if you don't want to run a mechanic like this, run it like this. Like, no, don't. If I at my table want to adapt a mechanic, I will. Don't worry. Yeah. Just write the mechanic how you want, how you feel like you want your game to run. But this narrative game, perfect space for this.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the more trad games, like, I think it's nice to say it once. To just be like, hey, if you want to tweak it, fucking go for it, right? It's not, once it's in your hands, it's not my game anymore. Say it fucking once, right? Because some people do, would like, not just an implicit, like, sure, I can do whatever the fuck I want with it. Some people do like to get that permission a little bit, something in their brain, it works fine. Give it to them one fucking time. But if every time you put a rule in your book and you go, oh, but if you don't want to do it that way, you can totally do it your own way. Like, it just feels like a complete lack of confidence in your rule set.
Commit to the thing that you're making.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, say, do whatever you want, but here's the way I did it. And these are the rules. You know what I mean? Like, you can change it if you want. But like, once you've said it to me once, I just need to hear it one time. You know what I mean? If I need to hear it at all. I don't need to hear over and over and over and over that I can just do it my own fucking way. I get it. Have some confidence. Write your fucking game.
Listen, you can do this any way that you want. Okay.
Dude, trust me. I fucking do. anyway, so that setting, but at the bottom in the little red box, it said for the best immersive experience, turn off your electronic devices, give your undivided attention to the player's lead, make sure to not interrupt the narrative, basically just invest in the game. There's a section here on safety tools. I mean, of course you're going to have it here. I love that they do. It's a nice big thing right off the bat.
This is a good game to have safety tools in as well if you're playing with a group, because not necessarily like the setting is implied by the art, but because of like the art that kind of pushes you into maybe there's some more sexuality to it. Also, it's like witches and demons and darkness. Like, good. You should discuss it. This is an open narrative game.
Yeah, there's definitely some dark shit in here, and like you fucking die and like can come back shitty. Like,
you can come back awful. You can come back as like a ghost and be super negative, you know?
Yeah. I do like the way that they word part of it too. It says, rather than a limitation, consider it an important setup element that is designed to make the interior, the experience enjoyable for everybody. So like, it's not just like, okay, what are we not allowed to do? It's more like, okay, what are the beginning guidelines, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It says, in addition to this rule book, you will need a pen, a diary, blah, 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 blah. Okay.
The stuff you need.
Yeah. The stuff you need. It's a game. You need stuff. So there's the next one on one page and then the other page, because again, we're looking at spreads. We have game flow and scenes. This is such a great breakdown of everything. Game flow is basically you're activating turns, activating the scene, taking turns, and then there's a memory rule, right? So when you activate the scene through divinations or scene prompts, the player lays the foundation for the opening scene. So in turns, each witch of the coven contributes to fleshing out the world and the characters that populate it. The narrative effort is collaborative. Every witch takes a turn, right? There are 3, 5, or 7 rounds, depending on how long you want the game session to be. We already talked about that. Shorter number of rounds, shorter game, longer number of rounds, longer game. And then there is a memory aspect. So at the end of the scene, each member selects one of their records to become a memory. The memories get depleted whenever a player chooses to utilize them to pay the price for their power. That's an interesting part when we get to powers. I feel like if there was anything that might be explained just a tiny bit more, that might have been it, but we'll get to that. In the case of the witch, will no longer remember that part of the story they lived, and that will profoundly impact their bond with everybody else. So basically, when it's your turn, you write down in the record something that's like what happened, right? And that is and at the end of each round, you pick one to be a memory and you'll mark that. And then later you can spend your memories to fuel your powers, but you lose the memory. So we'll get to when we get to more of the scenes, there's really cool stuff about it.
That is also something that is in A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire.
Yes. Well, yeah, the whole game is...
Yeah, as you go through, you like are you lose memories as time goes on for one reason. I can't remember exactly the mechanic, but...
Yeah.
The comparison is, by the way, a positive one. I think that's like maybe my favorite like narrative journaling game.
Yeah, Thousand-Year-Old Vampire is absolutely amazing. I wish I would have got the other one. I don't know if you know what I mean without spoilers. There's two. Oh, there's two the versions newer of the book. One? No, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
And then there is the scene breakdown. So there's 7 scenes in like the whole thing, right? There's the call, which is the introduction. It's a scene that describes a coven coming together, how they gathered, and like gives the profiles of the characters. There's the initiation, which is the force that brought the coven together. And the assignment of a mission. There is the danger, which is certain obstacles, creatures, calamities, whatever. They alarm the coven and could put difficulties in the way of their mission. There's the investigation, which navigates a path fraught with obstacles to try to find what they need for the mission. There's the revelation, which is if the investigation has a fortuitous outcome, the coven will refine the tools needed to face down the threat. There's the threat, which means calling on its every resource. The coven faces the antagonist. And then there's the epilogue, which is what happens at the end. So, and the art on this is absolutely stunning. I love the, it's all witchy girls. Just, it's all cute witchy girls through the whole thing. And they're beautiful. This one is like crying tears of blood into a little pot, and that pot is growing flowers out around the entire page. And it's so stunning. Beautiful. Note, the scenes and related prompts will be further explored later. I love that. It literally says, this is just a breakdown. Keep reading. You got it. Such a good... One of the things I love about this is they do an incredible job of not assuming knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't... Like, you could have never played a tabletop role-playing game, and I feel like you could read this and understand how to play this game without any, like, wait a minute, like, what is a prompt? What is this? Like, they do a really good job explaining it all the way through. Like, even that, it says, we'll get to it further. Just keep reading, you know? I love the little notes. Okay, yeah. So, turns. At the beginning of each scene, after choosing a prompt, everyone gets a turn. As I said, at the end of the narration, each sister will briefly trace the record of what happened to their character in the diary. So you're going to, like, speak out your whole turn. And then at the end, once you've said your turn, you'll do a short kind of, like, blurb, paragraph, couple of lines, whatever. You don't need to write out the entire thing. If you're doing solo, write as much as you fucking want. But, like,
I would say I can see it in a group. If you're like, I'm going to write the whole thing, it's like, well, then either you're going to miss the next person's turn, or they're going to have to wait for you to write this whole thing. So yeah, shortening it, writing your little blurb, definitely ideal.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Each sister will briefly trace the record of what happened. When this is done, her turn in the round is concluded, and then you pass the diary to the next person. To the left, specifically to the left, along the left-hand path.
Always one pass would say. To the left.
Yeah. Yeah. To the left. To the left. Pass the duchy to the left. Everything is to the left, isn't it? Anyway, so the record is over when the diary compiles everything. Each scene is made of several rounds, as we said, choosing to set 3, 5, or 7 rounds. So it's 7 scenes no matter what every time, but it's how many rounds per scene you want to do, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you could literally do 7 different nights with 1 scene per night if you did 7 rounds per scene, right? But you could also just do 3 rounds per scene. You know, that means that everybody, if you have 4 people at the table with you, that means you're having 12 entries in the record in each round, and then each person is picking 1 of their 3 entries as a memory at the end. That's how it works. So I do love, even though it's like kind of straightforward, at the bottom here, there is an example of a 3-round game plan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so a scene. It says scene 1, the call, which one uses divination. And then there's like a box with a little witch girl and some butterflies. And it literally just says round 1, which one turn, round 2, which one turn, round 3. Like, it literally goes pretty straightforward. It literally just says round 1, 1, 2, 3 goes, round 2, 1, 2, 3 goes, round 3. But it's nice to see it. It's really nice. It's laid out super obviously. And then at the bottom, it says at the end, pick a record. And there's a note that says, as you move on with the scene, remember, put the task of commencing the scene to the next player proceeding clockwise. And this way, every sister gets a chance. So like, if you start with the diary this time, it'll finish, right, with everyone getting their turn, but then you pass it to the next person so that it's a different witch getting to start, like, each scene as you go around. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. One second. So the next is the guide to storytelling. So in the introductory call, this is too fucking small for me. Listen, I'm going to zoom in. No, scroll in. Wait. Yeah, here we go. I'm scrolling it in. So, the guide to storytelling. In the introductory call, each witch may dedicate her first few turns to describing some elements of the setting. Yeah. Defining the environment by describing what the character sees, outlining the history of the coven, describe the appearance of your character, respond to the following questions. Like, I'm standing at the blah, blah, blah. In the following scenes, however, it will gradually become necessary to introduce new story elements, describing the effect of your power, introducing characters, dropping hints, describing new places. The narration should last a couple of minutes and be brief enough that you can summarize in a few lines in your record. Use a time that the previous player takes to transcribe their own record in the diary in order to elaborate your piece of the story. If you need more time for reflection, ask for a few extra minutes. It's not a big deal. What's interesting, and I think it'll come up a little bit later, but like, imagine you want to spend a memory and one of the records that you had is your name. And right. You spend the memory of your name, you won't remember your fucking name. Like, and it's in here, and it talks about that, and it's really, really cool. So that is the beginning guide to story. The next is interactions.
So interactions. Witches can interact with each other, with the characters and settings they created by the sisters, yet to prevent your diary from becoming the chronicle of debates and to avoid disputes. Consider these prompts. Each witch can pose 1 question per turn to a fellow member or creature. The answer should be concise enough to not drag out the narration time as well as the summary of the record. If a player addresses their question to more than 1 member of the coven, those concerned should answer only on their turn. I feel like that's interesting. Like, you have to hold it in your head and be like, okay, cool. When I come around, this is how I'm dealing with this one. And a lot could happen between that. Next one, you can physically interact with other sisters or exert your power over them. Be sure to only describe the actions performed by your character and give the fellow witch a chance to react. Don't want to take anyone else's autonomy away because that's lame. And if a sister exerted their power on a playing character, the one affected must react in his following turn. It is not possible to reverse or undo an action taken by a previous player. So if you want to enact your will over another person, it resolves essentially when their turn comes around how they react and deal with it. There's no takesy-backsies. So you know, you might sour your narrative relationship with somebody in a way that's not satisfactory to what you wanted to do based on their reaction. Consider the weight of those actions carefully.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, like, you know, again, you can have you can have 3, 5, 7 rounds per scene and everything like that. So sometimes you could be interacting numerous times around the circle. And I really like these mechanics specifically, where it says you can pose a question and stuff. It gives me a little bit of like Archipelago vibes, because there's like cards and stuff you can play in that, where you can, if someone says something, there's prompts that the non-speaker can say, where it's like, one is specifically like basically like, I don't think it would be that easy, because someone could just be like, I win the game and beat the bad guy, and someone could literally just be like, I don't think it'd be that easy, and they have to rewind it back and like dig a little bit more and like give a little bit more narrative to it. Archipelago is a great game for those that haven't played it.
I need to get it. I was looking at it on Drive Through the day. It looks so really good. Cool. I need to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're a big Le Guin head, so you should definitely play it.
Let's not get into Le Guin.
Is that Jason Morningstar too? I don't remember. It might be. But I specifically love this, the prompts where like, because it's kind of weird to just basically to be like, I feel like I'm just like sitting here and saying my piece, and then you're saying your piece, and you're saying your piece. Mm-hmm. I really like this, like, ask another question, interact, wait for them to react. Like, I feel like this specific section, this little section here, really allows for more immersion at the table with other people in your story and you in their story. It's really great.
Yeah, I agree. Another great art piece, this woman under this cloth with this demonic wolf dude. Memories. So come back to, I think earlier it said memories will be explained later on. We're in later on now. By the end of the scene, each member selects one of their records to become a memory. A memory is a particularly important event for the history of the coven or for the story of the individual witch. Memories are limited. Every witch can obtain only one memory per scene, underlined. Very important. I love the underlined words because they draw the eye. They also don't stand out so much that I feel like they're too intrusive on how clean everything looks. As we'll see later, memories constitute a resource for the coven, as they can be used up to activate powers. In case of a witch's death, her memories determine her transformation, another key word there underlined, into a familiar spirit or ghost, which it'll go over later. And it's a very interesting mechanic. A memory can be your own name, names of other characters. The moment you awakened your inner power, pretty much anything that has happened to your character that is significant about them or about what they've done can be set as a memory. I think the story implications of memories are like really interesting. The loss of your name is one you talk about. The loss of names of your friends, the loss of the faces of your family when you awoken to your power. Like, there's so much that makes up a person that, like, you could use as this fuel. And the implications of what that would look like as you continue the story forward are really, truly very interesting.
Yeah. Obviously, the memories brought up Necronihilus in my head, and I really love using powers absolutely. Memories.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like I should read the last paragraph. A member of the coven who uses up their memory will no longer remember anything about that particular event. This may result in a sense of confusion, disorientation, or even trauma. I just think like that's an important part to read, because you want you want there to be memory should have cost to it. It's very important. Like, I could see someone be not fully committed to this and being like, yeah, I don't remember my name or whatever anymore. But like, it's very important, like, those things have meaning to the ongoing story that you're writing about your witch and the coven collectively.
Well, the other thing too is like when you write in your powers and like the setting and everything like that too, like in a lot of mythology and esoteric fiction and stuff like that, like your name has power.
Yeah. Like, hey, man, it's like Caleb Gwynn, you know, your true name, you know?
The true name. So if you lose your true name, like that can be as devastating as that can be extremely devastating.
Yeah.
I see this note
here.
Yeah. Oh. This is the one I had to read twice. I think I even wrote a little note about the note.
I'm gonna be honest. I don't know if I read this note. I remember the art piece. I can't remember what it says though. To maintain plot consistency, you may choose to forget events that are not featured in the records you marked as memories to activate your power. In this case, indicate as a used up memory the record you have just write in the diary.
See why I read this one twice?
I do.
Yeah. So I think this is just a little bit of a translation thing. So I wrote here.
Go ahead. What'd you write?
Basically, you can use a memory not in the record. Just note it in the record. And by doing so, you use the memory you would have gained from the current scene. Because it says at the bottom, underlined, remember that your character will skip the memory selection phase at the end of the current scene. So you can choose to make up a memory of the past. Yeah,
like
your childhood
is the one it says here.
Yes.
You forget your childhood. You don't get a memory of this scene, but... You use that one. It's like, okay, cool.
So instead of picking one at the end of the scene, you can choose one to use during the scene and then just not gain one at the end, basically, which I think is great. Because
I think narratively that makes a ton of sense. I think that is great. I think it's a great rule. I hope that it'd be nice for them to retranslate it, but I think that's actually an important like side rule, you know?
Yeah, it's huge. Well, it specifically says too, one thing I like about it is that like you can use a memory not mentioned as the plot unfolded. But that is crucial to your character's growth. And that's what's really great is like this might not have been something that happened while you were writing stuff down. But if losing this memory is really good for the narrative and for your character, just get rid of this. Just create them. Just say the memory now. Get rid of it now. And you just don't get a new one. And I love that. I think it's such a good mechanic to have in the game to just be like, you can just make up an even more a memory that'll fuck you up more if you want to just get rid of it, you know. That's cool.
For doing what you do, you know, your first true love, like
so many good things. Another little witchy girl, dude, with the demon fox like coming up underneath her and shit too.
I mean, you can't say enough about the art in this book. It is truly, truly amazing. I'm definitely interested in the graphic novels you have now because I'm like, oh, I would love to look at more of this art.
They're really, really fucking good.
So the power. The power. Magic can be a curse.
What power?
Power of the man. No, I'm not doing it. I refuse. The power of the man. I refuse. Yeah.
Listen. Just gotta pull out our cod pieces.
Your Bowie-esque, you know.
It's straight Bowie.
I know. I was gonna say your Bowie-esque reference. Magic can be a blessing or a curse, or a blessing, a curse, learned or innate. I'm not good at reading. Its origin makes no difference.
Don't need it at all. Yep.
For its use always has a cost. The coven soon grows aware of how quickly. They can get worn out by their gift and tend to use it rationally, learning to accept the sacrifice involved. I think what they meant was sparingly. There also exists three levels of power that each witch can utilize, and these are really super interesting. So it's charm, spell, and incantation, and the cost and the effect of which are all different. So charm is kind of a low-level magic spell with limited effect. Generating a flower from a seed is the example they get. Make a small object disappear, optical illusions, and the cost is hours or minutes of the witch's life. Or it can result in sudden fatigue or aggravation of a pre-existing condition. A spell, which I feel like is like the core effect that you're going to do more often, the mid-level magic, producing positive or frightening effects, including over time or distance, such as wilting a centuries-old tree, creating a pool of simmering pitch in front of your enemy, witch stuff, right? The cost is hours of the witch's life or one memory. The sister will be affected by rapid aging or loss of part of their memory. And then there's incantation. This is big witch magic, you know? A magic skill that reveals the full potential of the witch or the coven and draws on their energy. The unrestrained force of both creative and destructive nature can lead to unpredictable consequences and come at a deadly cost. By calling upon their power, a witch can regenerate an entire burnt down forest, exorcise an evil haunting a village, or even enable a fellow sister to travel through time. So massive shit. Your real true arcane witchdom. The cost, depletion of the entire life source and all of the memories of the character bringing to their death.
Good stuff. So like, this is what I... No, go for it.
Were you going to talk about the... Go ahead.
No. Finish what you're saying, then I'll
hop in. I was going to say, this is... If you're doing an incantation, there's going to be a loss of life. Something or someone is definitely dying to make this huge thing pop off. And there is a note. If you are playing in team, we recommend using a divination tool to define the outcome and consequence of the incantation. Super interesting way to resolve that as well.
Yeah. I think, do they talk about it? Is it on the other opposite page where it talks about it a little bit more? Alternate cost. Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. So this is the part I was talking about before where it said in the beginning that how I read in the beginning before I read to this part is that you use a memory to use your power, period. And this clearly says there's more to it than that. And I really like that. Because the charm having little effects but still having pretty big effects is such a good narrative tool to make small things happen but still like it says chop hours off your life, minutes off your life, like something that affected you from a previous spell getting exacerbated by that. I really enjoy the levels here and the way that the memories use is interesting because at the end of the day, as I said in the beginning, they basically said memory equals power, but there's three options here and really your memory is only used on one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what's interesting. I am curious if spell would be the primary thing people use or if charm would be a little bit more. And obviously I feel like it's going to come down to the narrative. If you feel like you need something as powerful as a spell and stuff.
Yeah. I feel like probably narratively spells are used more consistently just because they are in that you're not everything you're gonna want to do is gonna be this massive killer thing, and it feels like the charm is a little maybe not as useful most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they developed this with spell as the thing, and then it grew as they went.
That's my assumption because of the way it was written previously. Yeah. That memory equals spell. You know. Also, this is super random. The smoke on the bottom of this page is one of my. It's the best smoke. It's I know that's random. It's so great. This on the other page, though, this is also on page 19, one of my favorite pieces of art, period, in the entire book. And of course, it's because it's probably gory as hell. But basically, it's a fox and a girl entwined, kind of head to butt. But
I think it's the same wolf that we've been seeing.
It's the same wolf and girl. Yeah, of course it is. It's like a fox wolf situation. Yeah, but her arm is literally punched through the body of the wolf, and the wolf is literally ripping the flesh off of her ribs and scratching the claws in, and just the way the color pops and the symmetry, everything about it is just such a gruesome and beautiful and
great it's piece. Like a witchy Ouroboros.
A little bit. They're eating each other. Yeah. Interesting.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's crazy. I never turned my blur back on. Blur, boom. So, one thing that I brought up was the alternative cost. I think I said something about this before. So this is the witches have the ability to combine their power. So you can make the cost specifically of incantations, not an entire life. You can make it a couple of memories of everybody. So basically you can share the cost of an incantation so that somebody doesn't die, but everybody kind of gets fucked up. And I think that's really cool. This is another one of those things we're talking about where there are alternatives in the game for narrative purposes, which is really great. But it also talks about, like, with charm and spell, if you don't want to use a memory, you can use the life sources of the things around you, like plants and animals and very, like...
I do remember it saying that.
Yeah. I immediately went to, like, a Dark Sun place where I'm just like, oh, we're going to fuck the world because we're terrible. There's a note that says life and memories are two simple and intuitive tools to set a price and pay the cost for magic, but you can use other things. Like, for example, you can pay by losing the ability to maintain human traits. For Necromancer, the cost... for using the magic could be the consumption of spiritual energy. So as long as the magic has a cost, you can adapt this system into other things. I love that they use memories here, but I think if you play this a bunch of times, it would be cool to be like, why don't we try something a little different, you know?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I like that they have that as an option.
It feels like they have good guardrails on this game, but at any point in time, because it's just so narrative, you could lower those rails and run it a little bit differently. And it wouldn't, it'd be very easy to do, and it wouldn't be obtrusive to how this kind of works innately.
Yeah. The only thing that I think, the hardest thing that I think would be to adapt something like that is the core concept of the gameplay is that you write records and pick one as a memory. Mm. Converting that power source, quote unquote, into, so you have a set number of those, right? Like it's giving you, like, you now have six memories. That means you can cast six spells. If you're just like, we're getting spiritual energy instead, you have to like figure out a way to create like the resource that you can use in your resource management. So it's just like in each of your records, are you picking the one that like gains your spiritual energy or what? So that would be an interesting, fun thing to adapt.
Yeah, you got to cut off an arm to do this, you know? You need the bodily energy. Yeah, you know, things like that where it's like, I mean, I think you could do anything as long as the, it doesn't really matter what you're using. It really matters about how the cost affects the narrative in the long term or even the short term. So whatever you decide to do, it just would have to have some implication when you write the next or continuing journal entries.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would be really interesting. I think it'd be really fun to do. I just think that would be the part where you'd have to really be like, well, what is a resource? How do you gain the resource? I think is the only part that you'd have to like keep in mind when you did it. This piece of art is the piece of art from the book.
Oh, cool.
Ooh. Yeah. Hit us with those power prompts.
So this is basically just where your power is from and what kind it is. There are two roll tables, shout out roll tables, but you don't necessarily have to roll on them, but I would. So for origins, there's curse, blessing, innate, learned, or originate from an object and originate from a condition. And they're all kind of like, you understand those things, originate from a condition, bit by a werewolf, you have chimera venom, some sort of satyr disease, object. We've all held cursed objects in the game before. It's very straightforward. And then the typology. Is that the right word for there? I feel like that's, what am I thinking of? Typology is just the type. Elemental, space, mental, shape-shifting, necromancy, healing, summoning, just the type of magic that you have. They have some really great examples in all of those, and I encourage you to buy this book and read those examples. Yeah. Now, the note here, if you wish to use the prompts to define your character features, roll a d6, to choose one out of six characteristics for each list, or just pick, you know?
The next page is the divination, which is interesting. So I think the divination is really cool, but I would definitely start with prompts. I would 100% start with prompts. So the divination, the witches have mastered the art of reading omens. So there's a number of divination tools you can use, and you actually use those divination tools. It's interesting, they give you a breakdown of all of them in the back. We'll get to that. But basically, they give you the options to use tarot cards, Makedo, runes, or tea leaves, and there's appendices for all of those. This is offers free, imaginative, and sometimes distressing interpretive possibilities. The reading of the signs can be based on the tarot designs. Basically, you can choose to interpret it however you want. There's a box at the bottom that says interpreting the signs. At the beginning of each scene, the first witch will perform a divination ritual. That's why you pass the diary to a different witch each time. So at the beginning of each scene, the divination is done by a different witch. So this has an example. The scene is a threat. The drawn tarots are the magician and the tower, and then there's an interpretation of the magician and the tower. In the appendices, it actually gives you a breakdown for each one in a way that makes it narrative, which is interesting, so we'll get to that. And then we're getting into basically a breakdown of each of the scenes and how they work. And that's kind of it for the book. So it says the next seven, the next pages detail the seven scenes. The layout is organized to frame the plot and an advisory for setup and everything. I love this page. I love that there's a page that basically says this is how to read the next batch of pages. You know what I mean? Like, again, another thing that I really loved about this book is the usability in it is crazy, and I wish more books were like this. I know there's a constant struggle between like vibe and like teaching, but I'm like,
but here's the great
this
example.
One does a good job of both.
I know it keeps the vibe the entire time, and it, like, I don't want to say holds your hand because I don't feel like it's never talking down to you, but it's just like, hey, here's how you would interpret these things. Everyone should take note. This is an incredibly well done book.
The way that they put the art in, the way that it's laid out and are very artistically, but the ways in which they specifically make notes to teach you as you go through is just, I feel like I could play this game right now after reading it. I mean, I've read it multiple times now, but the first time I read through it, I feel like I could easily just pick it up and play it, which is great. Like, we read a game that basically said, the first time you read this book, you won't know what you're doing. And that's not good.
No, that's a bad policy.
So there is, it says a guide to solo role playing here at the bottom. I feel like I put a note on this because I wasn't sure if I liked it or not, but let me read it and we'll find out. So for the solo RPG experience, you will need D6 in a diary. You roll for prompts depending on how long you want the adventure to last. It basically just tells it, it gives you the solo version of how to play the game, which is the same way. It's just by yourself and using prompts and stuff. So it's good to have. I do love that it's here in big red letters for someone who might not have done solo role playing before. Again, like, it's taking the time to teach. So we have the seven scenes. We'll just bounce back and forth. I'll do one, you'll do the other one. So the first scene is the call. And again, I really like that the page prior to this said the way that it's written out specifically. It's written out to be like a guide. It says, you can use, the layout is meant to organize and frame the plot. So is it advisable to respect the setup in the first few plays? After you get familiar, you can change it up a little bit. But this is written so that it's easier for you to understand. So basically the way the page is laid out is there is the name of the scene, a little like 2 to 3 lines about what the scene is. There's 3 or 4 leading questions. There's a note about those questions. There's a scene objective, like what like the scene objective should be. And then there's a D6 set of prompts and then probably a beautiful piece of art on every page of the next 7 pages. So it's extremely well laid out in the way to just kind of like go through the 2 columns and be done. So the call is the introductory scene. It allows you to develop the meaning place, to find your bonds, to find the character, things like that. So the leading questions are things like, what force brought the witches together? Were they summoned by a benevolent entity or a demon? Do the witches gather in a familiar place or is it somewhere different? There's a lot more than this. I'm skimming through like 4 or 5 questions for each little dagger. And then it says, is the covenant a close-knit group or held together by weak alliances? The note says, your imagination is the defining element of the place and characters, each which will be able to decide how they are getting to the meeting point. So the point of the call is to get everyone together. There's a something that revolves around, but everyone gets to make their own decisions. So the scene objective in like a little box, it says introduction of the characters / description of the setting. That is what you want to happen here, right? So roll me a D6 on mine and I'll roll a D6 on yours. So the one of the D6 prompts for the call scene.
I rolled a 2. You suddenly find yourself in an unfamiliar place. What has brought you here? What elements manifest the presence or intentions of this entity?
Great. And they're all great. Everyone all the way through is really, really great.
Yes, they're all really actually very good.
Mm-hmm. The next scene is initiation. So what's scene 2 all about?
Scene 2? So the scene objective, define the origins and purpose of the mission assigned, or test the powers. The initiation scene reveals the entity or incident originating the call, and this will test the power of each sister In accepting the mission, the Coven will receive the first essential insight into the dangers they will face and gain a greater awareness of their potential, deepening the purpose of the Union and the nature of each character's individual power will allow you to direct the story towards a common goal.
There you go.
Are you going to roll for this one?
Yeah. Did you already say the scene objectives?
Yes, that was what I started with. Find the origin. Gotcha.
And then I rolled a 5. So the power is activated with no one being able to oppose it. In the meantime, a presence is in control of its effect. What secrets have been revealed and at what cost? Ooh, interesting.
One. That would take me a minute.
The next one is danger. I really like this one. And then opposite side is another one of the coolest pieces. It's actually the piece on the back of the book. Sorry, it's the fox wolf demon. I'm gonna go wolf. But it's kind of like the head of a human male with the body of a human male with the head of a fox. But there's hands coming up, but then there's like hand prints kind of all over them. But there's trees on the eyes, and it's from a very like bottom, like waist high, a little bit lower ish view up towards the head. A little smexy. With the another like moon kind of coming through the trees behind. It's dope. So this is the danger. So in this scene, signs causes and effect of the threat emerge with clarity, and the new face sees disruptive elements, and you gain insight leading towards the investigation. So some of the leading questions are like, what exactly is a danger? And what does it cause as a threat? Under which circumstances does the Coven face a danger? Does the danger put the lives of other individuals at risk? Things like that. There's a note here that says the goal of the mission assigned to the witches may not necessarily be limited to defeating the threat. So the mission, defeating the threat isn't necessarily the mission. There is a mission, and the threat is kind of in the way. The dangers and threats are in the way of that. So the danger could be part of the mission, or it could be trying to stop the mission. So just beating one or the other doesn't necessarily mean that you succeed. So the scene objective on this is facing the danger and identifying some features of the threat, and directing the investigation. So what is your role on the prompts for this?
A 6. Some shadows are following you. How have you detected their presence? Do you decide to confront or ignore them?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that some of them are like kind of, I don't want to say easy, but they're kind of a little bit straightforward. And some of the other ones are like very, like you saw on the last one, you're like, oh shit, like I really have to think about that one.
Yeah.
I really like there's a solid mix. Scene 4, the investigation.
During this scene, the sisters attempt to find the information and materials necessary for them to accomplish the mission and or defeat the threat. This is a key step in the development of the story. And if the end of the characters, I have a little thing blocking me here, as the success of the Coven will depend on the outcome of the investigation. A quick little note that I noticed, I was reading earlier and it said, referring to a character's turn, it said his. The rest of this, it says sisters and them. And I don't know if you heard me pause when I said his, and then I kept going, but
because it specifically says at the beginning, we use her for consistency, and then there's like a his in there. Yeah, there's
the scene objective, finding the necessary items to accomplish the mission, identifying the weakness of the threat, learning the full potential of the power. And for prompts, we got,
I rolled a 3. You realize that your power is insufficient to deal with the threat. Who or what can assist you in your training and at what cost? Love that. Love that. Especially for the investigation part. I like how a lot of the scenes really bleed into the next one. It's really nice that it keeps like a solid flow. It doesn't feel like there'd be a hard stop. It almost feels like
rolling into the next one. Yeah, absolutely. They do not feel like, you're right. There's no hard stop. There's not a separation. It's a continuous narrative you're creating.
If you read through a lot of the prompts, some of them you could almost put or even before or after, like some of the ones before the investigation was more like the danger one and the investigation one. I feel like some of them could flip and flop a little bit. So like some of them, I feel like there's a good crossover that really helps kind of monkey bar between the scenes, which is nice. Scene 5 is a revelation. So the Coven wraps up the investigation, and thanks to collected artifacts or knowledge, they're able to face a threat and complete the mission. So some of the leading questions. What information has the Coven gathered? What elements do the sisters have at their disposal? The note is the path of searching for knowledge powers are useful objects for the Coven to achieve its goal. Goals resulting in receiving the revelation after comparing clues. I locked myself. So the scene objective, summarizing the investigation results, defining a strategy to deal with the threat, and concluding the mission. That's for the revelation. So what prompt you get?
For prompt, we have 5. To use the full potential of your power, you must perform a dangerous ritual that involves a sacrificial offering. Do you plan to stain your conscience, or would you rather give up the benefits? What are your alternatives?
I love that one, because if you look at the piece of art on the bottom here, another one I love, because again, as we've established for like 180 episodes, I'm an edgelord piece of shit who likes dark stuff. So there's this little witchy girl bleeding blood at her eyes, mm-hmm. but one of her eyes is gone now, and a trail of blood is leading from her eye to a dagger that has speared through the head of some kind of skull-like creature that I assume is attacking her. So it seems to me when I see this picture, and another thing that's so great about the artist's art is the story, like written into each piece. There's always more than just looking at it, is that this creature is attacking them, and she literally has sacrificed her eye to turn it into like a blood dagger to kill this creature. And it's so good.
Love that. Scene six, the threat. The Coven will have to call on all the powers and resources obtained to face the threat. In this critical moment, the sisters will have to make difficult choices that may even include supreme sacrifice. The outcome of the confrontation will determine the end of the adventure and the success or failure of the mission. I do like the implication that you can fail.
Oh, hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Scene objective, defeat the threat or surrender, conclude the mission or fail it. A note here. I have not been reading the notes. Whoops. The threat does not have to be a monster, a disease, or an evil character. The reasons underlying its actions might emerge at the moment of confrontation. Some examples of antagonists that can be dealt with without a direct confrontation include groups of creatures who are defending their territory or an entity unaware of doing harm. What matters is that you create an entity that poses a real challenge to the group, one that can adapt to the incantations casted by the Coven or skillfully negotiate an armistice. Very cool. And what prompt do we get for this?
I got 6 on this one. It says, backed into a corner, the threat takes an ally hostage, intimating his readiness to kill him if you do not retreat. How will you act? Is the sacrifice worth winning the battle? It's interesting. A great piece of art at the bottom with like a half flaming creature's face. It's really amazing. And on the other side, above the epilogue scene, is a really amazing giant wolf picture. It's hard to describe. You have to just look through the art. Yeah. So epilogue. Yeah, it's so good. Epilogue 7. This is totally different. There's not a lot of prompts or anything like that. It says, the Coven has faced a threat and has come to the end of its journey. Notice it does not say won. Will the sisters receive the reward, or will they sink in the mire of defeat? In this scene, each witch, including those deceased, will describe their epilogue in a single record. Coming out on top is not the only way to make your story engaging. Sometimes a glimmer of hope seen in your self-sacrifice is a good alternative to a happily ever after. Letting the villain win is another way of introducing rare and refreshing experience in the RPG world. Also setting you up for another scene, if you want, like a whole other round, if you want, if the villain wins. The scene objective here is just concluding the adventure, receiving the promised reward, or narrating the consequences of defeat.
I muted myself. I was saying that you could do a whole sequel to this. There could be a whole sequel adventure, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The villain wins, yeah. You got to try again. Next page is the death page, which is great. I also love the art on this, where the girl's whole chest has basically become very Helsing-esque, if you've seen the manga or the anime.
It reminds me of Helsing when he summons his weird spirit
wolf dog eye thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so there's eyes across the whole girl's face. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and one of her boobs is going to become like an open mouth, and mm-hmm. She seems a little disappointed by it. She seems pensive in her face. So death, a witch or warlock's death is a part of the life cycle and does not necessarily imply the end. In the event of death following battle or illness, the use of one's power, etc. There are things you can do. So basically, you can either become a familiar, a spirit, or a ghost based on how you died. So if the character has preserved most of their memories and has a positive bond, they become a familiar. Mechanically, that means it. In case the familiar is sacrificed... The character is now reincarnated into a talking animal with no power, which can still be helpful to its companions or sacrificed to cast a spell. So instead of a memory, the ghost of your friend who died and became a talking animal familiar can be sacrificed for a spell if you want. Like, cool. I like that.
I come back as Pooh from Yu Yu Hakusho. I don't know if you remember the end of the Dark Tournament, like Genkai's in that dumb little thing they have with them. It's so fucking stupid.
I've only watched like 15 episodes of Yu Yu Hakusho.
You haven't watched Dark Tournament?
No, I've not.
You should. It's one of like the foundational like tournament anime like.
I'll have to check it out.
Arcs.
I started Yu Yu Hakusho, and it's one of the ones where I was like, this is cool. Like, I had no reason to, like, stop. I wasn't just like, I don't like this.
100 times better. I know. It's just fine at first, so.
Yeah. And then if you're a neutral, which means you have preserved a few memories and the self-sacrifice has been so traumatic that your essence is trapped, you become a spirit. The spirit can intervene in a scene only after a divination and acting in basis of the interpretation. So that means you can't decide to sacrifice or anything, but the person who is now the spirit can interpret the divination and act the way that they feel interprets, which is great. Mm-hmm. The sisters may attempt to summon it by casting a spell, but it will not always act in their favor. Or there's the ghost, which is evil. The witch has used up all their memories and turned into a restless presence trapped in an endless cycle. Her presence will haunt the coven on a particular or a particular area and make it dangerous. It will never act in your favor, but the sister may attempt to give her peace by casting an incantation. So you could sacrifice your life to give the ghost peace, or with the alternative cost, you could all sacrifice a bunch of your memories. And then that could bring about peace for her. The next section is all divination tools. I love this art too. This kind of it's kind of like the front art a little bit with like the wolf behind her again, but it's a different vibe, different girl, different everything.
It reminds me of the depiction of God in Kill 6 Billion Demons, which is like this multi-faced god and then like a person meditating in front of it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So the next batch is the divination tools. We're not going to go through them. It's cool. I do like the for the tarot, I will say specifically. So if you look at the Arcanum, for example, let's say the Fool, there is a breakdown of what the card generally means in tarot, which is like free spirit, new beginnings, desire, anarchy. But there's a character section underneath it for a narrative prompts. So for the Fool, the characters could be a prophet, a nomad, a visionary, a jester. So when you're using your divinations, there's a breakdown of like 4 or 5 possible character options to give you a prompt for bringing in characters into your story, and I really, really like the way that they did that, as opposed to just being like, because I mean, reading tarot and being good with the prompts is a skill in and of itself.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, giving you the options specifically, especially for other characters to come in or parts of the story, is great. There's a tarot reading. There's an example. It's cool. I like it. Same thing with runes. Same thing. And then there's like a whole page on runestone divination and how you do it and the different types. Like, they do a really good job, even if you just use this as a reference for how to use fucking divination tools.
Oh,
it's
dude,
really cool.
This back section is sick, completely divorced from this game. I'm like, oh, this is a cool tool to use. Yeah.
So good. great piece of art here with like a wolf with some like fire underneath it, and then like a bunch of like little witchy girls with wolf like hats on dancing around its head in a very, very interesting way. Makedo, which I had never heard before, but it's like, I think I've seen it, but it's basically like sticks, and you throw the sticks down on the way the sticks overlap, different like colors and stuff like that, give you different breakdowns. Really, really cool. Alchemical symbols are a big part of this. And there's a whole, again, a whole step-by-step breakdown of how to do Makedo, and then a really cool couple pages on how to read tea leaves, which I always thought was cool, but never knew how. And they give you a whole breakdown on like 12 different styles of tea leaves reading. So fucking cool.
They could have just made a book on divining and like, yeah. It's like, it's super solid. I thought this back section, I love this back section. I think it's really super interesting. I didn't finish reading all of it, but like I scrolled through like, oh, reading tea leaves and stuff. Like, this is great. What a fun section just put in here. And we're like, what a fun alternative way to play this game after you've played it a couple times. Like, yeah, we're all going to brew tea and we're going to read tea leaves.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And like doing like Mercado for the first time and stuff like that. I mean, I feel like it would give you whole different vibes because like, you know, you could go more like Oni style with all of your stuff or, you know, really interesting. Whole back page of the Coven, which talks about Laputian or Laputin, Atropo Clevera, Valentina Sergei, like the breakdown of who these people are, what they've done. Really great. Obviously, they've done a bunch. Last page, it's the back page. I will just take a quick, you can take a quick peek at the grimoire, different piece of art on the front. There's like a cat with a bunch of eyes and stuff. And basically what the grimoire is a thematic prompts manual. It says a grimoire is a magical book of formulas and incantations. It contains thematic prompts for each of the different scenes. And the prompts for each scene, the text and illustrations you find on the following pages were made by 50 different authors who participated in the contest held on the occasion of the Last Sabbath Kickstarter campaign launch. So each of these, there's basically pages for each scene, the call, the initiation, everything, and it's full of art. And on each piece of art, there is like the name of the illustrator. And then on each prompt, there are the initials or the, however you want to do it, like call sign, some of them, some say Otter, some say NK, of the person who submitted the prompt. And if you look on like the first, stop doing that, go away. If you look on the first page where it talks about like the acknowledgments, and the contributions, you can match most of them directly to like the names that are listed here in the contributors. So it's really cool that they got so many people together, bunch of different artists, bunch of different authors to do a whole prompt guide. Because once you use up the six in the book, you'd literally have like 20, 30 more for each scene through the entire book. And there's a really cool thing in the back where they did, it's called the First Coven. They do a breakdown of like an early version of a couple of scenes from the first time that they played this, like a beta version of this. That's interesting. It is different. Clearly it's different than what the game is now, but it's cool to see where it came from. I wouldn't have minded this. It's cool that it's here. I would not have minded this in the first book so that there's a better example. I would have also not minded literally an entire example of an entire 1-7 scenes with everything. I think that would be really cool too. I mean, that's a lot, but it'd be even just doing one full scene with the current rules, I think would be the only thing that I could consider adding.
I would love to see one full scene with the current rules. I think putting this in the last book was cool. Would be cool. I don't think it's really necessary, especially because it's not really exactly the same game. But like, yes, I would love to watch a scene or read a scene playthrough with the current rules. I mean, I have a good understanding, but I'd love to watch it play out still.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to play it.
Yeah. I think very highly of this project.
Yeah. I played the shit out of this. I would absolutely play the shit out of this. Yeah. So we're gonna review this. Are we book?
I was gonna ask you. It's not really a book. It is kind of a book, but it's not really a book.
I mean, here's the thing: is a lot of times our cutoff has been like 30-ish pages. It is like with all the divination tools and everything. It's like 44, but it is also 8.5 by 11.
It's 8.5 by 11. There's a lot in here. It's a small book, so book.
I mean, I think it has books. Yeah, I have books up. So it's a full 50 points with 5 metrics instead of 30 with 3 metrics. So our 5 metrics, for those that don't know, art and layout is the art and the layout. Usability is usability tools like or the usability of the game itself, like the ease of use, hyperlinks, bookmarks, things in the correct order so you understand it, things like that. Rule set. If it's an adapted rule set, how well is it adapted? If it's new, how do we like it? Originality is, that's just Google. And then value is the cost for not only the game, but also the amount of stuff that's there for the game. If there's a ton of extra content, if third-party licenses, things like that. So for art and layout, obviously we think incredibly highly of this. I mean, yeah, it's disgusting. The art, yeah, the art is amazing. I think the layout is extremely well done. Again, like every page in and of itself is beautiful. It never feels crowded. It always feels, but it also never feels empty ever. Whoever did the layout on this did a great fucking job. And clearly the artist, the award-winning, amazing fucking artist, did a good job of making it look really good. So, what are your thoughts on this?
Dude, I have nothing meaningful to add to this. Like, I love the way this looks. This is, I mean, could it be better? I don't know that it could, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even if we get to... it's not part of art and layout, I guess. I was going to say, even just like the book itself, and that like it's like sewn binding and like foil on the cover and stuff, like just adds even more to everything. Honestly, yeah, I would be cool, I think, going in the same direction you're going.
Do it.
All right. So a 10 for art and layout on this. It's a stunning book.
I have no argument against that. Like, it really is quite beautiful, and it's incredibly readable, and it's well laid out, and it's laid out in a great order, although that's usability. But yeah, good job. Yeah.
This is the thing about a 10 is like, I do not have a single negative thing about this, and I can't think of a way that it could possibly be better. So for art and layout, easy 10 for me. Yeah. Usability. So, I mean, the only knocks that we've said on this a couple times is just the fact that I think it was written first in Italian and then translated to English. So like, I mean, it'd be nice if it was perfect, but I honestly don't really think that we can knock them for that. Like, the hyperlinks are there. They're just in Italian. It would be nice if I could read them, but again, it's only 33 pages. It's not that bad. I think the only, there was just a couple times, I think maybe like two, maybe three in the whole book, where there was like a sentence where, like, that note page on page 16, I think is the only one that really stands out, where I'm like, wait a second, I need a, there's some stuff in a weird order here. Let me break down what this is. I think that's the only thing. And then there's a couple of like tense switches or like pronoun switches, I think, that are just like if it was Spanish, an O and an A, I'm not going to say anything about Italian, but like, so I'm not going to knock too hard on that. I think the book is, I think we said this over and over again, like, the notes are really great. You're guided well through the entire thing. I feel like before you get to any section, they do a really good job of introing the section, like the game mechanics overlay in the beginning, the whole page that basically says like the next 7 pages, like, here's how to read them, here's how to use them. I can't think of a lot of things more that I want from a usability standpoint, as far as like the guidance in the book.
I mean, it's incredibly usable. It's a way to, I mean, I, once again, I don't have anything to add. Like, I have no complaints about this other than like a couple of localization notes, but those are, I mean, even those are fairly minor and you can still parse it out. The table contents is hyperlinked. Stuff is like put in boxes when it needs to be paid note to, or is like a little side piece. The notes are great. None of them feel superfluous. All of them add like to what you're doing. This is a pretty high usability for me.
We know it's not a 10.
It's not a 10, but it's still in the 8, maybe even 9 range.
I think I'm about an 8. I think I'm about an 8 here, which, again, we have to let everyone know that, like, 10 doesn't exist in this. The 1 10 is already out there. So, like, a 9 is basically a 10. I'm at an 8 for this, I think, because of where, and it's in relation to other books. Like, when you think of something like Death in Space, where they literally, like, every section is color-coded by section, and, like, you know, like, every table has its own hyperlink. Like, there's, it's not that it's not great. It's just that, like, other things have done so far above and beyond that we can't go more than that. But I'm definitely okay giving this a solid 8, because I really can't think of more that I want from it other than, like, I mean, I can just use my phone and Google what the hyperlinks mean, but I don't need them because it's short enough. But, like, that would be only it. And again, I've already said we're not going to knock points off for the Italian-ness.
Right.
Of course not. This isn't.
Of course not.
Yeah.
We're not that kind of American, you know?
Right. rule set. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, there is a rule set. It's so different. It's so different than what we generally think of as rule sets. Like, we're not talking about, very rarely, like, all the mechanics here are basically just like a lot of prompts, a lot of how to use prompts, And then basically just like structure. That's what the rule set more than anything is, just like a structure for how to tell a cohesive story, and then the prompts in order to use it that way. And I think that's like totally fine. It's just so different than really most of the things that we've looked at before. Because a lot of times, I mean, I'm a big mechanics guy. So this one is not mechanics heavy. It's narrative heavy. So it's interesting. It's different. I would say that I think that it's very, very easy to understand.
Yes.
I think if we start, we could literally start a game right now and we'd both be like totally fine and have a great time.
Yeah, you know? I agree. But not to knock it for being a framework or being simple, like it does what it does really well. And it doesn't overly bloat with like how things are supposed to work. It leaves a lot of space for you to narrate, for it to be narrative. I like the rule set. I can't think of anything that I would definitely change. It definitely leaves it very open-ended to adapting it to maybe do something else. I think very favorably of it.
I mean, that's the strength of it too, in that in a very good way, like in a positive way. It gives you the rules and then gives you lots of not only guidance on variation, but room for variation. Even as far as giving you a whole nother fucking book of prompts and stuff like that. So that's great. This one's hard for me. I don't think it's perfect. And I think we're not doing rule set in relation to only narrative games. It's got to be to everything. So because I would say that I'm biased in this, and my bias is going to show because it's my fucking podcast and I can do what I want, in that I do prefer mechanic-y games. Like the only game we've ever given a 10 to is Kingdoms, which has like three layers of like micro standard and like macro play and stuff like that. So like it's almost like losing points for its simplicity, even though we love simple games. But where are you at for this? I don't even know where to begin my thoughts. I was probably about a 7 for this.
But I like narrative games. You know, I like
narrative games too.
Stop lying, bro.
I do like them. I own, like, anyway.
Do you own that you've not played, Ryan?
That I've not played? I have not played like 90% of what I own. Well, like, are you serious? But I own like thousands of games.
Yeah.
I've played hundreds of games, and I probably haven't played like 70 to 80% of the games I have, and I've played hundreds of games. So, I'm between a 7 and an 8 for this. I don't, whatever. I'll give it an 8. We're good with an 8. You said 8. That's fine. I'm good with that. Originality. Witches exist, covens exist, journaling games exist. I don't think there's anything new or different in this. Even when we talked about the rule set, we talked about how it feels a little bit like Thousand Year Old Vampire. It feels a bit like Archipelago. There's nothing groundbreaking about this in any sense of the word. It's gorgeous. It's stunning. It's done super well. But as far as being original, I mean, I can go on itch.io right now and probably find 1,000 like witch journaling games. You know what I mean?
Probably. Yes. Yeah.
So,
but I think this is good. I mean, it does the thing well. Yeah, I mean,
yes. But we're talking about originality specifically. I mean, I'm probably like a 6 for this. I mean, again, not to knock it. It's just that like it's great. It's not groundbreaking.
I think they agree with this one.
But I'm not going to give it just a 5 because I do think the way that they do it is interesting and it's neat. I love a lot of what they do. I think parts of it are the way they put it together has some originality to it, but I don't think any of the parts in and of themselves are that original. Value.
It is $27 for both books physically on Knave of Cups, which is pretty crazy.
Friends of the show, Knave of Cups. Shout out Knave of Cups.
Yeah, I also shout out Knave of Cups. I fucking love Knave of Cups. Every day that I don't get to buy something from that site, it's a tragedy because all the shit on there is like cool, cute shit. For just the rules only, it's $20. I don't know if that comes with a PDF. I can't remember if Knave of Cups gives you a PDF. I think they do. But I'm
not sure. But 27 for both the book and the grimoire is crazy.
Yeah,
That's crazy. So
I mean, the Grimoire alone is just, that's months of playing this game.
Well, you know? it's as big, if not bigger, than the regular book. You know? And it has a lot of the same, like, accoutrement, you know. It still has the, well, no, so that one is staple bound. And I don't think it has the foil on the front. So it's not quite as nice. But $7 for that. If it's $20 for the regular book and then $27 for both, that's a crazy good deal.
I agree.
We talked about it's bang for your buck, not just flat cost, but flat cost for that is a really great deal. And that's a solid bang for your buck. I don't think there is or ever will be more to this. I don't know if there's any type of third party license for it either. I don't remember anything specific in the front talking about being able to do your own thing with it.
It'd be so easy to write your own prompts though.
Yeah. It specifically doesn't say anything about being able to use it or adapt it to anything else, and specifically does say that, like, no part can be used without permission, like, just a standard kind of, like, default, you know, copyright. So that kind of sucks that there's no specific third-party license for it. I feel like the vibe of the game feels like the people would be down for that. So that would be nice to see. So I think mine's also signed in the front, which is cool. I don't know if yours got signed.
I don't think so. But very cool.
Yeah, I mean, if only one comes signed, obviously I keep it and you get the other one, but you know.
I have no feelings about that, so.
But so solid financial value. I think there a lack of third party license and probably a lack of like any future expansion to this kind of knocks the value down a little bit for me.
Yeah.
So, where are you at for that?
7, 8, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think a 7's good. I mean, realistically, value-wise, it comes down that, like, the books themselves are a good value financially, but not much beyond that.
Yeah.
But it's a really good fucking value. So, that's going to give us a 10 plus 8 plus 8 plus 6 plus 7. Damn, 39. One of the high scores of the year already. With that 10, I can guarantee you will see this at the end of the year on our roundup. So this will not be the last time we talk about Last Sabbath here on the show. Anyway, so fantastic game. Really, really enjoyed a lot. It is something a little bit different than what we normally do on the show, which we want to start doing a little bit more variety, of things like this. Again, I think the game is great. The mechanics are great. The layout is great. The art is absolutely fucking stunning. Please go follow them on Instagram. Again, it's LOPUTYN. I know that you can grab, I think at least Aether is available, I believe, on Amazon. But both of the comics from the artist are very, very much worth it. They're stunning and heartbreaking and beautiful and just, yeah. Fits so perfectly with the game that was created here, so that's really fantastic. And that's our show for the day. Coming up, I don't know what we're doing. The only thing I will say is Black Rainbow Society from Worlds of Kroga is out. It's got like it's like a 40-day thing. I think this took like 30 plus days. And for the next 3 weeks, we are going to be doing giveaways of the different Worlds of Kuroga projects. Next week will be Neuro City. The week after that will be Warpland. And then we're going to wrap up with Hell Knight. Gabriel sent us one of each to do giveaways for. So look for our Twitter page. And I will do my best to remember on Monday to drop a tweet that says, like this tweet. Most likely continental United States. We'll pick one on the show next week, get that sent out to you. So, and it's all the hardback versions too, because there's a newer hardback colorblind version, for Neuro City, and there's a hardback of Warpland. I also have the backs in both, but regardless, all three of those over the next 3 weeks, and go back, Black Rainbow Society, which is an expansion of Hell Knight. And some other really, really cool stuff that I've been talking to Gabriel about is coming down the pipeline from Worlds of Kuroga 2. Definitely go back to that project and sign up for those giveaways. And that's it. I got nothing else. You good?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Last episode with the long beard.
I was just going to say, go have fun shaving that beard, buddy.
I'm going to shave this beard. Yeah. Farewell.
That's all we got. Bye.